Today on ID the Future, we're happy to bring you another interview with Dr. Tom Woodward, host of the Universe Next Door syndicated radio broadcast. In conjunction with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, Dr. Woodward regularly interviews CSC scientists and scholars on various aspects of the debate over Darwinian evolution and intelligent design.
Welcome to the Universe Next Door, where today we are delighted to have, on the other end of the phone, Dr. Michael Behe, professor of biology at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania. He is the author of Darwin's Black Box, one of the most important books detailing the case for intelligent design, from the incredible irreducible complexity found within living things. And of course, he followed that up in the area of design theory with The Edge of Evolution, which appeared in the year 2007. And Dr. Behe is doing ongoing research, has published articles in many, many peer-reviewed journals, especially on this topic of what are mutations capable of doing, or even experimental data may be showing what they're not capable of doing at the biochemical level. Dr. Michael Behe, thank you for joining us again on the Universe Next Door.
I'm happy to be with you.
Thank you so much for your work. And of course, I am really thrilled today. We're going to be talking about a kind of a birthday celebration of a long-standing experiment on, of all things, E. coli bacteria. I hope I've described it. I don't even want to dare to pronounce the full lengthy name. Is it Escherichia coli?
Escherichia coli.
Okay. And I think there's several billion of those little bugs in each of our digestion system doing their work. Of course, the good strains.
And they're good for us.
They're good for us. And of course, I know they're bad E. coli bugs. I think I caught one in Peru a few years ago when I was speaking at universities there. But today we want to focus on your work, not only your groundbreaking work, which first appeared, your book Darwin's Black Box appeared in 1996. I have my students every year read the 10th anniversary edition, which came out in 2006, in which you added a kind of a, as I was saying, epilogue chapter, replying to your critics. But we also want to hear what your latest thinking is on what we are finding, what science is finding in the world of biochemical complexity. I believe you received your PhD in the work of molecular genetics or biochemistry at, was it University of Pennsylvania?
That's right, in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia, one of the eight Ivy League schools. I was up the road at the competition at Princeton. So you wear your, was it red and blue tie? And I'll wear my orange and black tie and we'll have a good time. So the work that you have done has highlighted the especially irreducible complexity as a tremendous challenge to the plausibility of nature-driven, i.e. mindless, undirected processes doing the work of writing new code and especially creating multi-part systems. Would you just explain, as a recap for those that are not maybe as familiar with your work in the book Darwin's Black Box and many, many other articles and research venues, explain irreducible complexity and tell us, do you think it's as strong today as it was when you proposed it in 1996?
Well, irreducible complexity sounds like a fancy phrase, but it's really a pretty simple idea. It just means that you have a machine or a system or something which has a number of components, a number of parts to it. And the parts interact with each other. They press on each other or they pull against each other or something. And by doing that, they produce some function, some activity that the parts by themselves can't do. And if you take away one or more of the parts, then the system is broken. It doesn't work anymore. That's the irreducible part of it. Complexity part is that it's got a number of components. You know, I think it's good to kind of get an example of these. It's easier to get your mind around it. And an example I'd like to point to from our everyday lives is the mousetrap. Mousetrap has a number of parts, a mechanical mousetrap. It's got a spring and a bar and a wooden platform and a number of different things. And it turns out that if you take away the spring or you take away the bar or the wooden platform, it's broken. It's not like it works half as well as it used to or quarter as well as it used to. It's broken. And it turns out that that presents a problem for putting it together gradually. And that's kind of the big stumbling block for Darwinian evolution. There's a lot of things like the mousetrap in cells in the sense that there are systems that have a number of components that are all necessary. And because Darwin always said that he envisioned evolution working by tiny, small changes that improved something a little bit, and then over long periods of time, that change would help creatures survive and spread through the population. And another tiny change came along and would help further. But with an irreducibly complex system, it's very difficult to see how that could happen because you need pretty much all the components together to get the function of the system.
And that's where you often have quoted Darwin, right? The numerous successive slight modifications.
Which yes.
Is, again, and then you say he, in his own book, admitted that if we show that a system cannot be built that way, my theory absolutely breaks down.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He always insisted on that. And it was fine for his time because biologists back then didn't know the great complexity at the foundation of life. They didn't even know what a cell was. They thought it was a kind of a little piece of jelly that was not very complex. But modern science has shown that the cell is extremely complex. And let me give you one example. There's a little machine in a lot of bacteria called the flagellum. And quite literally, it's an outboard motor that they use to swim. There's a motor and there's a propeller and there are clamps to hook it onto the cell. And the propeller turns around and around, just like in a motorboat. And if it didn't have the motor or the propeller or any of a number of parts, then like a mousetrap, it'd be broken. You can't have it kind of halfway. And the cell is just filled with machines like that. And nobody has been able to explain their step-by-step gradual evolution that in a Darwinian fashion.
Today with us on the radio, Dr. Michael Behe. He is the author of a number of very important articles and especially two very key books, which are like pillars of the intelligent design theory today, Darwin's Black Box. And of course, I always recommend the 10th anniversary edition published by Free Press and the follow-up book to that, The Edge of Evolution. Dr. Behe, in 2014, now we're in a new year, the Darwinists, I think, were claiming back when you published your original work in the late 90s that, oh, we will figure these pathways, these evolutionary pathways out for the cilium, the hair, the whips back and forth, the flagellar system, flagellum rotary engine, and let's say blood clotting requiring 20 proteins. Have they published detailed, experimentally verified pathways yet for these systems?
No. They haven't.
A thundering silence.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's one of the most frequent responses I got when the book first came out in 1996, which is 17 years ago now, is that, well, give us some time. We'll figure it out. Yeah, these things are complex. And in the meantime, there have been a number of very bright scientists who don't like intelligent design one bit and who were highly motivated to try and show it to be wrong. And some people have published some responses, but when you read them and get down to the nitty gritty, no, nobody's ever explained how such machines could come about gradually. And so I feel with each passing year, you get more and more and more confident. I am no longer even expecting to see anybody give a really well thought out reply to the problem. It's just insolvable within a Darwinian framework.
The idea of irreducible complexity, which was brought to the public's eye or to the public's awareness through your work, Dr. Michael Behe, has produced this follow-up work. And we have about 2 minutes left before we jump onto a break and then come back and talk about Linsky's bacteria experiment. Your follow-up book is attempting to show where the edge of evolution is. And just tell us in a nutshell, about a minute and a half, what are we finding when we open up these systems, and are the mutations happening, and are they building things nicely together, these mutations within cells?
An excellent question. I wish I'd asked that myself. It turns out that Darwinian evolution can do things. And if you think back to your biology textbooks, many biology textbooks would give examples of how Darwinian evolution worked. And one famous example is the sickle cell mutation with malaria. Turns out that people with sickle cell have a little bit of resistance to malaria. And there are a couple other mutations which also give resistance to malaria to humans. But now that science has advanced, we get to see what exactly the mutations are and what they do. And it turns out that overwhelmingly, what they do is break things. They break genes that were already there and that were already working. And somehow, by breaking the gene, it actually helps people resist malaria for reasons that I could get into but won't right now.
Right.
But the long and the short is that while those are helpful and those are real examples of Darwinian evolution, they're degenerative mutations. They do not explain where complex machinery and complex systems could come from in the first place.
And so the highly touted mutation selection mechanism seems to be very good at one thing and one thing only, that is breaking complexity and throwing things overboard, practically speaking.
Exactly. Yeah. If you were out on a ship that was sinking, it would be a mm-hmm. help if you could throw away some complex machinery and lighten the ship.
And make it get into port. We're short on time for the segment. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Behe on The Universe Next Door. I'm Tom Woodward, your host. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Universe Next Door. I wanted to give a quick thank you to the wonderful people out in Seattle, Washington, at the Discovery Institute for their support of this program. And we have with us today a very important scientist who has weighed in on the issue of whether the latest scientific evidence is really supporting the standard orthodox theory of neo-Darwinism that says that the predominant knitting together process of new complexity in the cells is driven by chance events at the genetic level, namely mutational events, typographical, or we might say digital errors that are being inserted into the text and supposedly produce improvements, even new genes, new stretches of DNA. So we want to thank Dr. Michael Behe for taking time out from his work as a scientist, both a research and teaching scientist there at Lehigh University. He is, as I said already, the author of two key texts on this issue. And that is Darwin's Black Box was a book of the year. It was my privilege to write the story of Dr. Michael Behe and my own history of the Darwin design debate in the book Doubts About Darwin. And then followed that up with Darwin Strikes Back, the subtitle, which is Defending the Science of Intelligent Design. All of those books, including Dr. Behe's first and second book entitled The Edge of Evolution, are available on our website, which is apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. Dr. Behe, many people have in the past asserted that, the evidence for evolution is quite clear because we have so much genetic evidence that shows that cells are mutating all the time. DNA sequences are being copied with each generation of a new cell. So you have literally millions of mutational opportunities and millions of chances to jiggle and move around the text and come up with new sentences. What are some of the important research findings that you found? You were already giving us one in the example of the mutation, the sickle cell anemia mutation. What are some of the other opportunities that we've had, for example, in the work of Dr. Lenski, to see whether these mutational events are really working and doing anything helpful for evolving new complexity?
Well, it's true. Organisms do undergo mutations quite a bit, but the question is, what do they do and how do they help? And there's a man named Richard Lenski, who's a professor of microbiology at Michigan State, who has been growing a bacterium called E. coli for 25 years. And since it's so fast reproducing, that turns out to be 50,000 generations. And the long and the short of it is that he's seen that mutations have come along which have helped the bacterium grow faster. But when he tracked down exactly what the changes were in DNA that it had undergone, he, just like in the example that I gave previously, he saw that the changes were all breaking pre-existing genes. They degraded them. They made them work less efficiently or turned them off altogether. There were no mutations which were building up new complex systems of the kind that fill the cell. So there's, from his very careful work, I have to say he's a firm Darwinist. He's no intelligent design proponent. Mm-hmm. But from the results of his work, I think we can say really confidently that random mutation is kind of like a bull in a china shop. It's breaking, or it's knocking around fragile and complex systems. And the odds of an improvement coming from that activity is slim to non-existent.
Well, so many people have tried to say, well, the pattern of evolutionary change has shown that we are really kind of sharing the same language, the same gene sequence as the most simple animals and plants. And some people have said that there's really no basis for intelligent design. This is just a God of the gaps argument, that science is always filling in these gaps. And so the intelligent design proponent, you're just saying, well, I don't understand it, therefore God did it. How do you reply to the God of the gaps accusation? I imagine you've heard that on more than one occasion.
Yeah, that's a very frequent point. Mm-hmm. This is not a God of the gaps argument. It was easier to believe that Darwinian evolution would work when we knew a whole lot less about the cell. Mm-hmm. Say in Darwin's time when people thought it was just a glob of jelly, or even up until about 60 years ago when it was thought to be relatively simple. But as the progress of science continued and continued, what we found was more and more and more complexity, more and more elegance and sophistication in the cell. Literally, machines, nanotechnology that humans can't even reproduce. And that is what drives the conclusion of intelligent design. Whenever we see sophisticated technology, look at the computer on your desk or your cell phone or anything, we realize that that's the work of an intelligent agent, and intelligence was involved in its construction. So that's a positive argument based on our knowledge rather than what we don't know.
Do you believe that you can look at some system and infer a designer by, as Bill Dembski has said, studying the low probability of that being produced by, let's say, a random sequence of events and the high specification? I mean, would you agree with the double kind of check the two boxes? Is it low probability beyond the certain limit of the universe? And is it also specified as an independent target, let's say, sharing a sequence that has an ideal pattern? Would you buy into that two criteria system to detect design?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent summation of how we detect design. And you should realize that we detect design all the time. Humans are good at it. You walk down the street and you see a flower bed with the flowers neatly arranged. Nobody thinks that they just grew there wildly. You see that they are specified, they're growing in pretty patterns, and that it's unlikely for them to happen. So it's something that's improbable and which, as you say, matches an independent target. That's what the mousetrap does. The shapes of its parts are very improbable. I've never seen springs or other parts of the mousetrap quite shaped like that. And their arrangement into a pattern which can trap a mouse is highly specified. Not too many things trap mice. Mice are pretty tricky. So yes, that's how we detect design. And as you can see, none of it is based on saying to oneself, gee, I don't know how that happened, so God must have done it. It's based on positive knowledge of what the system looks like and how it works.
Well, getting back to your main argument of irreducible complexity, we have about 3 minutes left, maybe a little bit less. We want to just ask the question. Darwin said, if it can be demonstrated that any complex organ exists which cannot be produced by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. And my question to you is, do Darwinists today try to distance themselves from that statement? Do they think that, well, Darwin was sticking his neck out a little too far? Or do they still say that, oh, we will eventually come up with some explanation? Darwin was okay to say that.
That's a great question, and the answer is a little complex. When they're defending it in public, Darwinian evolution, against the hordes, like the public, then they will say that, yes, we'll eventually show that. But when they speak in private between themselves, they frequently say that Darwin's theory is outdated. We need something to take its place. Here's some ideas. As a matter of fact, if you look at the books published on evolution in the past 5 years or so, almost all of them say that Darwin's theory is kaput, can't explain what we found. But what they're doing is trying to cast around for another unintelligent theory to take its place. And so far, nobody's been able to come up with one. And so when they circle the wagons, everybody gets behind Darwin's theory.
Right. Such as Shapiro of University of Chicago, who's come up with what, natural genetic engineering? Some of these other systems. And so would you recommend, as maybe a good update on those alternative explanations why they don't work well at all, would you recommend Dr. Meyer's new book, Darwin's Doubt?
Oh, yeah. It's an excellent book. I'm extremely impressed with it. And you can see why, although people are casting about for something new, they're not going to find it, because not only does one have to rearrange things, mm-hmm. you have to get them into the right pattern. And nothing but intelligence, in our experience, can do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Michael Behe, professor of biology at Lehigh University, author of Darwin's Black Box and also The Edge of Evolution. Two fantastic books. We're delighted to recommend them. They're on our website. And Dr. Behe, I wish you well in the year 2014.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to The Universe Next Door.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.